Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemennerds.com. And now, enjoy the show.
Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Lobot Lounge. This is another episode of the Gentlemen Nerds. Tonight, we are being brought to you sans one of our dear members, Joseph Fortinos, who normally is a wonderful MC and host. He had other responsibilities and could not make it this evening, but we are joined by a very, very, very special guest. Martin Thomas is joining us this evening. Martin, say hi.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here. It's cool to know you guys are doing this show. You're perfect for a show like this.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah, Martin, I've known Martin for many, many years, as has Mark. I'm sorry, Mark Finn. Say hi to the folks out in the Lobot Lounge.
Sweet Christmas, everybody. Sweet Christmas. And welcome, one and all. Those of you who are playing the drinking game at home, raise a glass to Joseph. He'll be back on the next episode.
Yep. And I am your host and metaphysical touchstone, Aaron the Odeva. I am a poor substitute for Joseph, but I will simply have to do. But as I said, Martin Thomas, incredibly talented illustrator. I've known Martin for many, many years. We would frequent the same circles, the comic book circles, the conventions. He is also one of the co-hosts and creators of the very popular Double Toasted, and he is fantastic on there. We recommend folks check that out. That is at doubletoasted.com. They've got all kinds of wonderful video blogs and reviews and just all kinds of fun stuff. It's a really, really solid site. We here at the Gentlemen Nerds aspire to the greatness that Double Toasted has achieved, and very well deserved. They've been around for a long time. I used to watch them on local Austin Access, so that's how far back we go. When everything was still black and white, and you know, we didn't have any color, barely.
That's right. And but, dinosaurs roam the earth. I had to kill a gorilla with a notebook if I wanted to buy comics. It was great. It was a good time. This would have been before the year 2000.
Wow. So, Martin, okay.
It was one of these things where I got a call that completely knocked me off Skype for a second. I'm back. Okay.
Okay. Well, good. See, so we lost. We were talking while you were gone, Martin, so it's great.
Okay. Martin, yeah, it was all bragging stuff about what a talented animator and illustrator and multimedia personality and film reviewer you are.
Absolutely.
So I'm kind of glad you didn't have to hear all of that, because it would have been a little embarrassing.
So, no, that is awesome. That is awesome. We are fans, Martin, as you know, and your arguments with Corey on various topics are legendary. And I love how you all give each other shit. It's just the most amazing thing.
I've known somebody for almost three decades. You get to do that.
You yes. do. It gives you a pass. It really does. Okay. So
tonight's topic, we are launching Black History Month with our special guest, and we are going to do something that we love doing on this podcast and talking about some of our favorites. So tonight we will be discussing some of our favorite Black characters in any genre fiction, any genre medium, whether it be movies, TV, comics, books, whatever it is, some of our very favorites. And so, wow. Martin, as one of as the the guest on our show tonight. You get to launch us on this topic and give us one of your all-time favorite Black characters.
And maybe tell us a little bit about why you like him or her, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to start out with somebody who has quickly risen to the top of the list. A controversial figure, although they shouldn't be, and they're fresh in my mind because I just saw him last night, and that would be Michael Burnham from Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, cool. Okay. Wow.
Okay. Now, controversial. I'm curious. Why?
Well, in as much as I have friends who will tell me that they aren't canon queens for Star Trek, but then go on to display that that's exactly what they are. So yeah. When they watch Star Trek Discovery, their lips are stuck out because that's not Trek. That's not Roddenberry's vision. It's too much conflict. And how can this link back to the original? And I'm so like, man, this is the Star Trek I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
For 15 years.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I mean, all the other Treks that you like, hey, man, they're still out there. And I'm sure they'll make more. But for right now, this is the one I've wanted. And so much of it is Sonequa Martin, who her portrayal of Michael Burnham, yeah, who is this character who is so put upon every turn. And still does her best to keep her head up and forge forward.
Yeah. I think what I like best about her in the show is, at least I haven't seen all of them, but I've watched the first four or five. I like the fact that she keeps her own compass, and even knowing the consequences, carries through on that conviction. That's not something you see very often. You know what I mean? Like, no. I'm going to charge into this cannon fire because I know I need to get to the other side of the thing. You know what I mean? That's pretty amazing, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also that it's something that's usually played where the character does that. And at the end, it's like, well, you know, you really broke a lot of rules there, but you had gumption, and we need somebody like you. So you get a free pass. Here's your promotion. It's Dumbledore going, and 300 points for friendship to Gryffindor because I like you guys.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
The other houses have to be like, what the hell, man?
No, I knew from the moment I loved her character on The Walking Dead as Sasha Williams, and her exit from that show has to be one of my all-time favorite deaths of a character, spoiler, I've ever seen in a television show. Definitely loved it.
Did not see it coming, Kevin.
Oh my God, it was perfect. I mean, it was just the way it was done, her listening to the music, these flashbacks she kept having. Oh, it was just amazingly well done. So when I knew that she was going to be the main character in Star Trek Discovery, I said, oh, I have to watch this. I mean, I've got to see the show. That's a fantastic choice, Martin. I think she's
strong opener.
Astounding, and she's an astounding character.
Yeah, very cool.
Mark, who would you throw out there?
I'm gonna kind of go vintage here for a minute, because there's somebody that when I was making a list that I kind of zoned out on because I hadn't seen this character in a while, but I remember what a big deal he was, so much so that he became a breakout from the breakout. Back in the early 90s, there was an initiative from DC called Milestone, which was an imprint of Black creators doing Black characters in and with situations that were specific to the African-American experience. And this was covered with great fanfare. And I got to tell you, the books, and while I love the idea, the books were uneven. There was one exception, though, and that was Static. I loved Static out of the gate. I thought Virgil was, and basically he's a high school kid who, like the rest of the characters in this incident, gets his powers from a falling meteorite. It's an event that triggers. And so he's got the power. He can generate and control electricity. And so he's a high school kid trying to keep it together. And the model for the character was clearly Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
Yes. We were missing that Spider-Man, and he filled that void.
Yeah. And to the extent that he got an animated series and then got another animated series. And then I think they gave him a third one. I mean,
he's popular. He's very popular.
Yeah. Static Shock.
Yeah. They rolled him into the Justice League universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I think that's awesome. And I think it's, I like the way it was written. They played him, as a character, with, the same kind of, like, you know, conflicted, you know, I'm grounded, but on the other hand, I got to go stop this guy, you know? Uh-huh. And I think it hit the note real. I think it hit those notes just right for Spider-Man. And I would not be surprised if that was partially how we got to Miles Morales, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's a straight line over Miles Morales.
Yeah. So, and
down to having a guy in the chair.
Right. Was
Miles Morales part of the Ultimate Universe, or was he part of the mainstream Marvel?
He was part of Ultimate.
Ultimate.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was Ultimate. Okay, good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that was all the Bendis stuff, which makes sense. But anyways, I love Static. I think he's one of the best written characters from that pocket universe, and I love the fact that he's been folded into the DCU. Just one of my all-time really enjoyable comic books that I've read and continue to read. And the back issues are cheap. If you can find them, guys, get them. They're great. The animated series is also fun. Yeah, they're not that expensive.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was of all those Milestone books, that was the one that I bought every month, and it was never a letdown. It was the most consistent. I mean, Icon was close, but Static you could really always count on. Yeah. And I don't think I had a bigger joy than when I was watching the JLA episode it was, but they go back in time and they go forward in time, and Static's there, all grown up, leading the Justice League.
Oh.
It's like, what? he's got gray dreadlocks and everything.
I know what you're talking about. Oh my God, was that?
Yeah.
Was that in a Batman Beyond? Like he went to the future, or maybe it was Justice League with. I know exactly the one you're talking about.
Justice League, but Batman Beyond is tied in with it.
Great episode. Yeah, great episode. And
John Stewart meets Hawkman, who's his son.
Yes.
Hawkman. He goes, Dad, what are you doing here? And he's like, what?
Cool. Yep. All right, there you go. So yeah, just to keep it, vintage, and I'll probably go more vintage in a minute, but
sure.
All right,
I wanted to make sure I got that on the table.
Mine is both vintage, and I'm talking real vintage and new, and I'll explain why new, because the character is Porthos from the Three Musketeers, nobody at any point before the show, The Musketeers, the BBC show, The Musketeers, would ever have associated with a black character. But now I cannot not associate. In my mind now, Porthos, forever, is a black character. The Musketeers show, which premiered in 2014, it's a BBC series about Three Musketeers. And they decided to cast a very talented actor, Howard Charles, as Porthos, and the backstory that they gave him, and especially given for our dear listeners who do not know, Alexandre Dumas, one of my absolute favorite authors, and also many people sometimes don't know this, but he is he's a half black writer. His father is sort of an infamous, a legendary character in history as the only black general, the first black general of a European army that there ever was. There are portraits of this man. He is a striking, handsome, amazing individual. Alexander was very much influenced by his father. Much of the Count of Monte Cristo is actually pretty much his father.
Yeah.
Really? That is who that character is. Now, the Count of Monte Cristo himself is described as having pale skin. They kind of want to make him like Lord Ruthven the vampire. But if you read about, and I'm actually going to look it up as we're talking about this, because I can't believe I didn't have this information ready to go. But if you read everything that happens to the Count of Monte Cristo, that happened in some form or another to Alexandre Dumas' father. He himself had people that wanted revenge against him, that were jealous because of his prestige and his power. They, for whatever reason, but I mean, it all comes back to, this amazing figure. So Thomas Alexandre Dumas, was the name of his father.
Yeah.
And, he served under Napoleon's army. He was a general. And if you look him up, on the internet, again, there's a great painting. He's on this beautiful black horse, and he's standing there regally, as they always did in those paintings. And he looks just amazing. And he looks like Porthos. And this is the wonderful thing.
Yeah.
This is probably what inspired that casting when they were looking at who they were going to get for this new show. So they decided to make Porthos a black character. And it's wonderful, and it's perfect, and it fits.
Yeah.
And there's many episodes that explore his past, who his mother was, who his father was. He's sort of estranged from his father, who is a noble, a French noble. His mother, I believe, was came from, it was one of the colonies, and I believe she was a slave. I'm not sure, but it was this whole issue of how Porthos was never quite included into the family, and so he got none of the inheritance that he should have gotten, but his father was always very proud of him. And anyway, it's just this wonderful, wonderful arc. And who would have thought, again, I've loved the Three Musketeers for decades.
Yeah.
And now if somebody says, oh yeah, Porthos is my favorite, immediately this image of this amazing looking black man pops into my head, and I go, yeah, I love Porthos. Porthos is astounding.
I got to ask you, what was your first exposure to the Three Musketeers? Was the Hanna-Barbera cartoon or the candy bar?
Well, of course, the candy bar, but no, I remember first watching a really early, I mean, I guess it was the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, but yep, yeah. That was my very first exposure to the Three Musketeers. Yeah. And just I remember every now and then, on TV, I'd be looking at various channels, and you'd have like the Danish version would be on, or one of the black and white versions of the Three Musketeers. Of course, I fell in love with the Three Musketeers with the Richard Lester version.
Yeah,
that had just in my opinion, yes, Oliver Reed, Richard Chamberlain. It still I think it is one of my favorite versions. Probably my favorite. And that's when I fell in love with it. And then shortly thereafter, I actually read the book, and then have been rereading it every few years ever since. But love those characters. I loved those characters. And like I said, it was the brilliance. When I saw the Three Musketeers, the show, for the first time, and they all walk out and they're introducing themselves and, blah, blah. And I'm looking at this one character. I'm going, I wonder who that is. And, one of them looks at him and says, Porthos, come here. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. That is genius. It is perfect. It is brilliant. And I love the actor who does him, Howard Charles, does such a great job. So I recommended people, and I plugged the show many times on our podcast.
If you've not
seen The Musketeers, folks, BBC series, you must see.
I had not seen it because I was always afraid. I was like, I'll watch this. It'll be like Merlin or something where everybody's a teenager. And I don't want to see this ruined. But man, what a recommendation. I gotta check it out.
It is wonderful. Peter Capaldi plays Cardinal Richelieu to great effect. And come on, it's Peter Capaldi. So no, it's fantastic, and I absolutely recommend it. But that now, oddly, one of my favorite Black characters is Porthos, as portrayed by Howard Charles in the Musketeers BBC show.
Also, Martin, bonus, since it's a British show, your time investment is not, you know, humongous. So, you get three to four seasons. It's, you know, it's like basically watching Stranger Things again. It's going to be fine. You'll love it.
Yeah. No, it goes on the list.
Okay, so
back to you, Martin.
That was a good round one. Yeah, you got another one for us?
Oh, yeah, back to me. All right, well, I will jump into the literary world and go with what may be a super obvious choice. I'm sure one of you had it on your list, but it would be Easy Rollins from the Walter Mosley Easy Rollins series of detective novels. So
good. Yes.
And, each one has a color theme, and it's hard-boiled detective, but not to the point of resembling Sin City or being anything like a parody. He's a transplant from Texas, living in L.A. in the 50s. He's managed to get him by himself an apartment building, which he owns, but pretends like he's just the janitor. And he's not so much a detective who hangs his shingle, but he's a guy in the neighborhood where if you need somebody found or something, odds and ends, that kind of thing, he's somebody people will come to. And the way the mysteries take off, it's one simple thing that leads to something else, and this other thing in the background, and somehow they've been connected the whole time.
So good.
It's the Walter Mosley, when he's writing the detective fiction, can't be beat. And if you're too lazy to read the books, I understand, but you can always rent the movie with Denzel Washington, Devil in a Blue Dress.
Yes.
And that's my only exposure. I've never read
very
the books,
early Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Don very Cheadle's early in Don that. Cheadle. Yes. And I love the movie. I wish they'd done more of them.
Oh, I tell you, Mark, that what killed me was my favorite book was the next one, the Red Death. And I was just so like, please let this movie be a hit so they can make the next one. And you imagine a detective movie with starring Denzel Washington and Don Cheadle. How is it that nobody went to see it?
I don't get it.
It's bad.
I don't get it.
I mean, even my mom saw it and she came back mad saying like, well, I thought there was going to be a devil in it. Like, no.
That's great.
Nice. Like, he wasn't fighting Satan. What happened?
Yeah.
No, Easy Rollins is a wonderful character. And that's something that they could actually restart. I'd love to see
They totally could.
Yeah. Yeah. A really under, detective mystery stuff always does well. It's a perennial bestseller on the bookshelf. It usually does well in Hollywood. It's not like Denzel Washington is less a star now than he was then, but you know, hell, you want to give it to somebody else, that's fine. You know, I don't know. It seems like a no-brainer in this world of let's reboot everything.
You're right. And with each book, the character would age. So it's not like Denzel couldn't come back and be easy from one of the later books. But we live in this time where stories like this really live on Netflix and Amazon. Yeah. I just got done watching Chance on Amazon, and I was like, man, Easy could work on there.
Yeah. Easy.
Well, I would not be surprised, gentlemen, if that, I mean, there is so much, there's so much need for content for all of these new streaming services. Apple's jumping into the game. Google's jumping into the game. I mean, it would not surprise me if this is a pitch on somebody's desk somewhere. Hey, let's do this as a TV series. Because it would be great for something like Netflix or Amazon.
Definitely.
Good choice.
Yep. Good stuff.
Right. Who's next?
Okay.
Mark.
Okay. This is actually it's actually kind of safe, but I'll explain that it's actually vintage. In the 70s at Marvel Comics, they were struggling. And one of the things that they were trying to figure out was their audience. And so they did a number of things that were emulating movie genres. There were a number of characters that were launched as a response to movies and TV shows, popular culture, the women's liberation movement. There was a lot of stuff, and some of it, and most of it, you know, I give them credit for the effort, you know, sure. Because they put a lot of stuff out. Granted, it was all written by guys named Morty and Saul,
right?
but it was, it fell in line with stuff that I was watching as a kid, like blaxploitation films, you know? So for me, when Captain America and the Falcon teamed up, I was super interested in the Falcon. And I think, and he quickly became one of my favorite characters. Just really, at Marvel Comics, he was a simple character. But I really like what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done with the Falcon, especially Anthony Mackie. I think he's done a fantastic job. He has quickly become one of my favorite Avengers. I love the fact that they seem to be lining him up to take a turn at Captain America. When I saw in Civil War, he turns to the gunfire and the wings pop into a shield configuration and become armor plating against the bullets. I thought, you know what that needs is a paint job. that could be red, white, and blue with a star quickly, you know? And so, I love the Falcon. He's one of my favorite characters. I thought he was, just a really cool, foible for Cap in the comics as a partner.
Oh, yeah.
But what they, I think what they did with him in the movie was really much more timely and topical. I love the fact that they're both veterans and they're both, you know, kind of dealing with stuff, you know. And of course, Steve's dealing with more than just the PTSD. But I like, you know, Sam in the comics was a teacher. And so this kind of, you know, teacher counselor is kind of a nice parallel shift. Also he just has a great attitude without being he's not sassy, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, I he's fun. You know, I love the fact that he calls Ant-Man Tic Tac. I just think that's great.
Civil War, Winter Soldier is probably my favorite Marvel movie. And Falcon has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
I knew they were going to bring Falcon in. We'd seen the previews before we saw the movie, and I was so just completely delighted with the job that Mackie has done and how he's really brought this character to life. I'm with you, Mark. Falcon is now one of my favorite of the cinematic Avengers. I really like that character. And I love how the actor portrays him.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. They've done a great job with updating him and making him work and making him a viable member of the team.
Right.
Mark, I wanted to ask you, because I remember how much, back in the '70s, I was in love with the Falcon, but I didn't discover him until he had the red and white costume. Then I had to go back and read the ones with the green and orange.
Yeah.
That's where he started. And I know you'll know this better than I do, because what was the reason that he was hanging out in the jungles of South America when Captain America found him or ran into him?
If I didn't have a medicine fueled brain, I could tell you the answer to that. I'm all hopped up on the cold medicine. I know this. It wasn't covert stuff. No, I think it had something to do. It's making me crazy. it'll come to me in just a second. Let me think.
You'll remember.
I will remember, and I'll jump in a second and be all like, oh, no, 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 no. But we did get, we did actually get a piece of comics history. Sal Buscema did a design sketch for the Falcon, the red and white costume. And
which I always liked, by the way. I thought that red and white costume looked awesome.
Yeah, oh, yeah, too. Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. The red and white costume was definitely the better choice. But he, we actually found the first piece of artwork with that design on it. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. That actually went up at Heritage recently, which was very, very cool. I want to say that it had something to do with Red Wing, is that's why he was in the jungles. But I don't remember the specifics. I thought it was that he that's where he picked him up. Of course, it might have also been it might have been a holdover from Vietnam, but I don't think Sam was a soldier. I think he was always a teacher.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. You know what? If I folks, those of you playing along at the home game, I've been stumped, so we all have to drink. So nice. I'll find the answer and put it on the Lobot Lounge Facebook page.
Perfect.
See how I turn that into a plug?
I like it.
Yeah.
All right, Aaron, go for it.
Okay, rescue well, me. I'm going to have to jump back to Star Trek, simply because, and I'm kind of going to do a twofer. I came from a small town in South Texas. Grew up at a time where I was not exposed. There was a lot of Latino culture, but not a lot of Black culture. There was not a lot of diversity in that respect. And I remember in Living Color, I would see the beautiful, beautiful face of Nichelle Nichols as Uhura. And more than anything, that allowed me to say, wow, look, this is the future. This is the sort of society that our world is building toward. And just, you know, one cannot understate the importance of having a character like that in the 60s on television. In a show about a future society. And so I just remember thinking, and this was the point, huh, that's normal. That is what our society is going to look like. You know, I come from a very sheltered society, so I don't have access and exposure to this, but what I'm looking at here is the future. That's what the world will look like. And so from that, transferring to Avery Brooks, on Deep Space Nine as Captain Sisko. That really, again, just cemented that, what a great character, what a commanding, you know, thoughtful, kind, philosophical, tough when he needed to be. You know, I just think he's probably my favorite captain. I know everyone says, oh, I love Kirk, or, you know, I love Picard. Nope. For me, it's Sisko.
Deep Space of all the new tracks, Deep Space Nine is far and away my favorite. Particularly as soon as Sisko goes bald, that's when the shit gets good.
As soon as he shaves his head,
yeah, he needed to get bald. And there's and of course they get into the war with the Dominion, and I will never forget. There was one episode where Worf disobeys a direct order and goes and does something and does exactly what we talked about. You know, he breaks a lot of rules and comes in at the end of the episode and says, Captain, I would like to submit myself for discipline. I was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. And Sisko turns on him and says, you damn right. You're wrong. just yeah. and choose Worf, a new asshole. Yeah. I was yeah. like, oh my God, that's great. I mean, he climbs that Klingon and bangs on his skull
yeah.
like it's a Chinese gong. It was the coolest scene. I was like, if this was not my favorite show ever before, it is now.
Yeah, you know? No, it's just so well done. And then
just took a run at him.
The wonderful development of the relationship with him and his son. And all the things that he was trying to impart to his son. And it really is, of all the tracks, Deep Space Nine is absolutely my favorite. I love the storyline. I love how action-packed it was. I mean, you know, Martin, you were describing, like, Discovery's too violent. No, I love that. For me, Trek becomes most interesting and most exciting when the stakes are very high.
Yes, with consequences. That was the thing. Right. There were consequences. You know, do I kill 10 people or 100?
Yeah. Well, just like what you're saying, where Worf did something, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry about that. And it's not like, well, you're a good guy, so it's cool. It's like, no. No, man. Sure, you did the right thing, what you thought was the right thing, but you're going to get punished for this.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. And it's how he would, you know, that voice that Avery Brooks would go into, this will show up on your record. You know, it's like he's lecturing you. You're like, yes,
there
sir,
was, I'm sorry, sir. There was kind of a Shakespearean quality to it.
Beautiful voice. He has a beautiful voice. He projects it in an amazing way. But I mean, if I was going to get bitched out, I would want Captain Sisko to bitch me out.
Sure.
That's who I would pick.
I'd be all right with that. Yeah. I'll take a 5-minute dressing down.
Yeah. So there's my twofer on Star Trek. Amazing, beautiful Uhura down to just commanding, fantastic Sisko. I will
totally allow that twofer. And I will go ahead and pile on for Zoe Saldana in the new series. In that they've made her, she's not the receptionist anymore. She actually has agency in the stories, which I think is nice. So that's good.
I actually like her relationship with Spock in the new movies.
Sure.
That was surprising, but somehow when I saw it, I'm like, yes, of course, this makes sense.
My wife has watched that first one probably 10 times. She's not, and she does not, you know, that holds up for repeated viewings. It really does. Maybe the second one, not so much, but the first one, super entertaining.
Awesome.
Yeah. I thought that second one was I thought the first one was fantastic.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the second one left such a bad taste in my mouth. Yeah. I've had trouble going back to watch them again.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah.
And I hate when that happens because it is always like, hey, this doesn't have to ruin that other one. And like, it did.
Especially since they're kind of bookends, you know, it's sort of like, it's sort of like someone takes the second half of your book and replaces it with 50 Shades of Grey. And you're like, wait a minute. where did the plucky kids go? And where's my Harry learns that he can speak Parcel Tongue. And now all of a sudden I'm dealing with Mr. Grey. What the
right.
That's not good. That's a mean thing to do to a book reader.
Yep.
Oh, it took me maybe 5 or 6 years before I could watch The Matrix again and tell myself, only have to watch the first one.
That's right. There's
nothing, because it has a definite ending. You don't have to watch anything after this.
Absolutely. No, as far as I'm concerned, there is only one Matrix movie. And that's it. It's a self-contained story. It ends exactly the way it should end. Amazing visuals, et cetera, et cetera. So I stop after one.
Smart thinking.
All right. Do we have time for one more? Yes, we have time for one more round. All right, Martin, lay it on us.
All right.
Take us on, brother. Right.
Well, man, I've been bouncing around on who I was going to have next. The first two I knew right off the bat. And all the others, I'm like, oh, maybe no. And I feel like fate begged me to mentioning The Matrix so that I could come to Morpheus. Okay. And how much I love that character.
Yeah. Because
every time I watch it, I see more about everybody, but also him. And how he's so confident and how he has pulled everyone together. There's a point when it starts to get mentioned like, well, he might be a bit of a zealot. And we don't know if he knows what he's talking about. And yet, while I might not be a man of faith, you get to watch him be that man of faith where it pays off.
Yeah.
The way he is with Neo when he's first taken him into the training simulation. That's just such perfect sensei moments. And no matter how many times you watch that first fight they have, it never gets old. There's never a point where you don't hold your breath when you watch.
Right. It's true. There's something about and for a character like that, you need that level of cool, you know, that only a character like Lawrence Fishburne can bring to it, where his voice is measured and smooth, and he looks like he's been carved from stone as he's sitting there and delivering the lines. No, absolutely. I think Morpheus is a fantastic, fantastic character.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the way he is, what he's delivering, I don't think I could have bought it from anyone else.
Right.
No, Fishburne has that gravitas, if you will. But I think he also has fun, especially, like you said, that combat training thing it's clearly, he's just playing with him, you know? He's just playing with it.
Yeah.
You think that's air you're breathing? You know, it's
yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably one of the best modern superhero movies. I still consider it to be the one that kicked everything off, you know.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
I mean, the only reason
I got to go with Blade on that.
I'll tell you why I don't.
Oh yes, no, Blade. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about Blade in a minute because I think actually Blade, even if none of us pick it, Blade does deserve to be talked about. But go ahead, Mark.
Totally. Oh, yeah. The only reason I wouldn't include Blade in the superhero genre is because vampires require no explanation. There was no heavy lifting on the part of the film to explain vampires, vampire culture, what a vampire will do if you put a stake in his heart. You didn't have to, they had an out of the gate advantage that Iron Man, for example, didn't have, or Spider-Man, to be more precise, or the X-Men to be dead on, you know, they didn't have to overcome the costume stigma. They didn't have to overcome the stink of a bunch of Marvel failed TV projects. So I love Blade too. I love Blade also.
So allow me to just do a counterpoint to that. See, to me, that's a feature, not a bug. I think they took advantage of the fact that you didn't have to explain what vampires were. You didn't have to explain how to kill them, what hurts them, etc. But all of the wrappings are still superhero. The way Blade dresses, that is a costume. That is a superhero costume.
And it stands out. It's like, okay, that guy's wearing a costume. Why is nobody swiveling to look at it?
Right. So I think I think it is a superhero movie. And I think it's a superhero movie that played it very smartly, because we didn't have to swallow that he got bit by a radioactive bat or whatever it is. Right. You know, we know how vampires are made. We know that's how vampires, it. You know, but because of that, again, I see it as a feature. They took that and said, all right, now that people are already familiar with this and can accept this, let's fold this into a sort of a cool superhero movie about a half vampire who fights these guys, because the fights are straight out of a superhero movie. The look of it is straight out of a superhero movie.
The weaponry is very high tech Batman-y.
How Blade acts and the way he moves and talks. He is a superhero. He's absolutely a superhero.
It's really a hair splitting semantic argument on my part. Right. And I certainly would not pick that as a hill to die on. just so you know, that was just my take, you know, in terms of this.
Okay.
I think the Matrix did technically that work, but Blade should absolutely belong on the superhero movie list for sure, no doubt.
Yeah. It was a Marvel property.
We had Blade, and it was closely followed by The Matrix, and then X-Men, and it was like having those things go boom, 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 which really kicked off the whole superhero movie golden age.
That's right. It was definitely a triple punch, no doubt. It was those three were the hat trick, the first hat trick.
And especially if you look at, like, you know, a question of who influenced who. Well, if you look at the costuming in Blade, and then look at the costuming in Matrix, and then look at what all the X-Men wore in that first X-Men movie, they were not looking back at the comics. They were ignoring the comics, and they were saying, "Hey, everyone loved Blade, and he looked badass in all that black leather. Let's put our guys in that."
What, Aaron? Would you prefer yellow spandex?
I love acknowledging. I want to give credit where credit is due. And Blade, I love all the memes that are popping up now everywhere where, you know, finally there's for Black Panther, there's a movie about a black superhero. And then it's got a picture of Wesley Snipes underneath with a WTF. And it's like, no, it's true. Blade came first. Blade was there. Blade blazed the trail.
I would even go to Black Belt Jones, being a huge Jim Kelly fan, but we'll save that for another conversation. Okay. So I agree. I think your Morpheus is great. All right. My third and final one. And again, I feel like it's kind of an easy way out, but, it also is, rooted in my childhood. And there's a reason why my greeting was Sweet Christmas, because I am a huge Luke Cage, Power Man, Hero for Hire, Cage fan.
I was expecting you to lead with that.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna bring it home because I think Mike Coulter is charming as hell, and I think he has done a really good job of making Cage likable. And I thought of the initial spate of Netflix series, I still think his was the strongest. I thought Cage was spot on. I like the fact that he, you know, doesn't immediately rise to the call of hero. I like the fact that he has to get pulled into it. I felt like there were several respectful nods to the blaxploitation genre, and in a good way. Also, the soundtrack was killer. But that has nothing to do with Mike Coulter. Mike Coulter just, I think, did an amazing job. I love it when they put the love notes in for me. And even if it's literally a 10-second thing that I wouldn't have asked for anyways. But we get one shot of him in tight pants, a yellow blouse, and a tiara. And he says, "I look like a damn fool," and he did. But you know, in the '70s, that was cool, man.
Oh yeah,
in the '70s, that was my guy, you know. And I loved when they paired him up with Iron Fist. I loved that whole run of comics. I liked what they did with him in the Ultimates universe, where they made him even harder, but also. I don't know. I think Bendis he really understood what was needed to freshen up these guys. But Coulter took that role, and I think he made it his own.
He really did.
Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful. I think what's good about this is at some point in time, it's pretty obvious that we're going to get Heroes for Hire, if not Nightwing Investigations. And here's what's nice about this. Mike Coulter is going to elevate Finn Jones. So Iron Fist is only going to be so irritating because you have Coulter to balance that out. See, it's perfect.
You're putting a lot on Mike Coulter's shoulders right now.
They are broad shoulders, and I'm willing to bet he can carry that load. So, Luke Cage, Power Man, Hero for Hire, all those early comics. And they are, to be fair, you know, you go back and revisit them. They don't play so well for a modern audience. There's language in them that certainly went over my head as a kid. I didn't think anything about it. I was just interested in seeing Luke Cage beat the crap out of people. To me, the hero was the hero. You know, I didn't really. But I think Len Wein and the other guys who were actually writing those comics, I think they did the best they could at the time, you know? So, you know, as long as going forward, we make improvements, you know, and make positive forward changes. I think it's okay to like, you know, all the different versions of these characters. You know, I wouldn't recommend that somebody go back and reread the earliest Luke Cage stuff, because it may not ring so trippingly for some of you. But there's a lot of new Luke Cage stuff out there that is great and is fun. And if you haven't seen the Netflix series, it's by absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it's super, super good.
Absolutely. All right. So last one, mine. All right. I'm going back to vintage. I'm going back to 1976. And these are all movies, and I've chosen them for a reason, because they made a really big impression on me as a young kid growing up, watching this stuff, loving fantasy, sci-fi, horror. But I go back to a movie that was produced in 1976 called Swashbuckler. You remember that?
Bert Lancaster,
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw, that's right.
Lynch, the pirate captain, and his cohort in crime, played amazingly by James Earl Jones, was a character named Nick DeBrett. And it is young James Earl Jones with his amazing laugh and booming voice. There are these two ne'er-do-wells who are hopping around Jamaica and pirating and fighting with the governor, played by Lord Durant, played by Peter Boyle. I love the character of Nick DeBrett. Not only is it James Earl Jones, I mean, James Earl Jones, everyone now associates him with the voice either of, you know, Darth Vader or Mufasa or whatever. No, this is him. This is vintage James Earl Jones, having a great time.
Svelte James Earl Jones.
Yes. That's fantastic. He looks amazing.
He was barrel chested at his best, but yeah, he's, I forgot about that movie. Thank you for reminding me of that. Holy smokes.
And dear listeners, if you can find a copy of Swashbuckler, however you get it, by hook or by crook, watch it. It is fantastic. It's so much fun. Everyone in the cast is clearly having a great time. But again, James Earl Jones, there was something about, you know, the sort of thing where I was a kid pretending to be a pirate. I'm like, I want my buddy to be Nick DeBrett. That's who I want at my side, fighting with me with that amazing voice and that great laugh. He was such a great character, and he stuck with me. He stayed with me. So then later, then of course, you know, Star Wars comes out, and I hear the voice of Darth Vader, and I'm like, no, wait a minute, I know that voice. And so it was very, very nice to see. Him actually in the flesh, running around, swinging swords, having a great time. So, yep. Swashbuckler, James Earl Jones.
Man, yeah, I'd never heard of that movie before.
Yeah,
it was a B-reel. It was not. It was back in the 70s when those kind of movies were not very profitable, because everybody was doing trucker movies and Smokey and the Bandit and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But
man, I'm telling you, like Angelica Houston, Beau Bridges, Jean-Pierre Vougeot, Peter Boyle, James Earl Jones, Robert Shaw. This was not an unknown cast in the 70s. These were all well-known actors.
It was big budget.
Yeah, not by any means.
Yeah.
Definitely big budget. I had there was a period where all that stuff was on DVD in a collection, if I remember correctly. I think that's actually available on DVD. I think you can still get that on DVD. So,
worth a look. I wish that I had bought a copy. I saw a copy years ago and I thought, I'll get it later. And now I regret it. I wish I'd gotten the DVD when I had a chance, but, if I find it, I'm definitely gonna snag a copy, cause it's fun. It's just great fun.
Worth a look. Definitely worth a look. All right.
Well, are we getting the red eye, Mark?
Yeah. We're Maximilian has given us the stink eye, it looks like we're gonna have to vamoose here. I'm not happy about it, but you know, what are you gonna do? He's a robot with a grudge.
He is. Well, awesome. Well, hey, Martin, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
No, thanks for working around my schedule. No, it's fun hanging out with you guys. It's been too long.
It really has been.
I wish I was closer. I really do. I would probably come hang out at the studio every weekend until y'all kick me out.
Yes, by the way, Martin, since I am local, if you ever wanted to invite me on your show, I would be happy.
Our doors are open for anybody who wants to come watch the show. And matter of fact, we're moving to a new studio this week. It was going to be next week, but it looks like it might be this week. We'll be up north.
Outstanding. Awesome. Well, once again, folks, doubletoasted.com is where you can find Dr. Martin Thomas. Not actually a doctor. But he is a friend to those who have no friends and an enemy to those who have no enemies.
I got to hire you as my publicist. You just get everything right.
Mark is good at that. Let me tell you, Mark is really good at that. All right. Well, that will wrap it up for us here, folks, at the Lobot Lounge. Thank you so much. Hopefully we will endeavor to have a review of Black Panther shortly after the movie opens. So be looking for that episode as well. Look up the various movies and such and comics that we talked about tonight and check them out for yourself. Or leave us comments on the Lobot Lounge. Talk about your favorite Black character that you have admired over the years. So I guess we will say then our final goodbyes. Mark?
Everybody. Thank you for putting up with us. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to say it for Joseph since he's not here. Red Skull lives.
The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and is written by Aaron DeRive and Mark Finn with special guest Dr. Martin Thomas. Music composed and performed by Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot, still nameless, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. Sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Executive producer and the man we pray never gets superpowers is Aaron DeRive. Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher DeRive. Join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we meet, and always tip your bartender and your waitstaff. We look forward to the triumphant return of Joseph Fotinos, your emotional touchstone.
Dr. Martin, can you hear us?
Oh, I almost heard him.
My mics are not cooperating, he says.
And I'll say, curse you, mic gods!